Our family was working poor. We lived in a house that was too small for a family of six. It was so small that I slept in my parents' bedroom until I was nine. A stronger and fairer New Jersey ensures that the wealthiest among us pay their fair share in taxes.
Restoring our leadership and innovation speaks to who we are.
This is Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. We'll be speaking with the New Jersey governor and taking your calls every other month. I'm Nancy Solomon. We're pleased to have Governor Phil Murphy with us here in the studio in Newark. Good evening, Governor. We're thrilled to have you here.
Good evening, Nancy. It's great to be here.
And we're excited to give New Jersey residents a chance to ask your questions directly. And we'll also invite State House reporters to join us each show. Later tonight, we'll have NJ Advance Media reporter Matt Arco join us. Listeners, if you'd like to ask a question, the number to call is 844-677-9283. That's 844-677-9283. We'll also be taking your questions via social media, so please tweet your questions for Governor Murphy by using the hashtag @GovMurphy. That's hashtag, I'm sorry, it's AskGovMurphy. So, Governor Murphy, you talked during your campaign a lot about your roots. You're a Boston native, you grew up working poor, you attended Harvard, then the Wharton Business School at Penn. What's less known about you is that you're a song and dance man, aren't you?
I am. I think it's quite appropriate that I'm at a house of jazz here tonight in Newark. And I want to say this is our first time doing this, and I want to thank WBGO, WHYY, WNYC. We're really excited about this, but I'm really thrilled to be here. This is quite special. And yes, indeed, I was a musical comedy guy in high school and college.
Right. So you were a member of Harvard's Hastings Pudding Club. You were on stage at one time with Candace Bergen.
That's correct.
And then you went into business. So first of all, is it possible to get a few bars of a song from you?
Oh, my Lord. I have to think that through. Maybe before the end of the hour. How's that sound?
You're going to punt on that one.
Yeah. I may do some tap dancing.
And any regrets about not going into show business? I mean, you're a ringer for Michael Keaton.
Oh, I love that. Wait till my kids hear that. I did think about it, I have to say. And I was a 4-year performer at the Hasty Pudding Theatricals, and I had the great honor of being on stage with a bunch of really talented people. But I was at the low end of that talent pool. So I think at the end of the day, I made the right call.
So it wasn't merely, obviously there must have been some pressure that you felt about not having family money to rely on, that you had to go out and make a nickel for yourself.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest reason. I didn't have any money. So I got into the Wharton School and deferred it for a couple of years because I couldn't afford it. And I sold textbooks and did that for a couple of years and loaded up on some more debt and went to graduate school and ultimately got a job in business. But I'm glad you raised my musical comedy roots because I've almost forgotten about them.
People should Google you and look online. The photos are pretty good. So Goldman Sachs worked out pretty well for you. You retired young and wealthy, and you could have done anything you wanted. Why politics?
Yeah, I sort of backed into working in banking. I think, frankly, at the end of the day, it was a lot about still having no money and having a huge pile of debt. Than it was. I had no role model bankers in my life growing up. My dad didn't get out of high school. My mom did, but banking wasn't something, unlike a lot of folks I worked with who were really sort of brought up in that realm, I wasn't. I guess the broad answer, Nancy, is that service, politics, community engagement, they were always part of our ethos growing up. As you mentioned, I grew up in Boston, outside of Boston. We were big Kennedy, big Kennedy admirers. My parents volunteered when he was running from House to Senate. And I always thought it was in my blood and that it would evidence itself in some way. I'm not sure I, frankly, would have predicted electoral politics, but I've been on a lot of boards. I was the national finance chair for the Democratic National Committee. I was the U.S. ambassador in Germany. So in one form or another, public service probably was in my cards. I'm not sure I could have predicted this exactly.
Let's talk about Germany for a minute. So you were President Obama's ambassador to Germany. And you had previously lived and worked there for Goldman Sachs. You were fluent in German.
I wouldn't say quite fluent, but I could speak it. Yes.
And Howard Dean told me you were fluent in German. That was okay. That was why he said you were the right pick. And at one point, you found yourself in hot water when State Department emails were hacked and released, and there were some unflattering remarks made by some of your German counterparts, including Angela Merkel. So, how did you deal with that, and what did it teach you about what is certainly to be the hard-knuckle politics you're going to face here in New Jersey?
Yeah, I guess the alleged cables that got leaked through WikiLeaks, and I say alleged because to my grave, that's what I will say, very challenging few moments there, I can promise you, unlike anything that I had ever been associated with, came in out of left field, And I think the lesson that I learned was get ahead of a crisis. Don't let it drag you. And that's just what we did. There was no playbook coming out of Washington for us. And so our MO was to get out in front, go see people like the chancellor. And it turned out when you go through something really difficult with a lot of the counterparts, German counterparts we had, our relationships came out stronger. And so I'm honored to say Angela Merkel is a close friend. I congratulated her last year as she was sworn in for her fourth term, and many others. But I'd say getting out ahead of a crisis and don't let it drag you is probably the most important lesson I learned.
Any surprises so far in your 2 months as governor? Something, what surprised you about it?
Boy, the weather. I'll tell you.
Talk about crises.
Oh, my Lord. We've been on storm duty a lot. Yesterday, first full day of spring, and we're dealing with another nor'easter. And you know what? I'm proud of the effort that we've put in on that front. By the way, there are too many people as we speak without power, particularly in the southern part of the state. And we're pushing the utilities hard to get that resolved. But that's been you got to get out ahead of those as well. You can't let Mother Nature drag you along. But otherwise, it's, you know, I had kicked the tires for years. I had been a candidate for a long time. We had a 70-day transition period. And I would say, you know, there are always things that you don't expect. But for the most part, we understood what we were getting into. In particular, this is a state that's in fiscal meltdown, and our job is to get that stabilized and to grow this darn economy again and make the state fair again. And that's basically what we campaigned on, and that's what we've been doing so far in government.
Well, since you mentioned the storm, I think we have this perennial problem of the power outages. Not enough of the lines are underground, they're overground. The answer that we're often given is it's too expensive to put all the lines underground, and the power companies would rather just keep repairing the overground lines. Anything that you as governor can do about
that? Yeah, it feels like the way you've described it, no way to run the Navy, as they say. In fact, we think there is something. The performance of the utilities in this storm, and I say this with folks listening in who are probably still out of power, and they don't care whether or not the overall performance is good. They care that their own power is out, and I want to make sure everyone understands I got enormous sympathy for that. But the performance was better. The last two storms, we had a disastrous response, particularly out of Jersey City, Jersey Central Power and Light. And so we've called for a full postmortem. And on that list was not just preparedness and cooperation with other operating utilities and the extent to which they activate their shared manpower agreements ahead of time and they've got a battle plan and their infrastructure, et cetera. Our president of the BPU today and I spoke to two elements that are definitely going to be part of that postmortem. One is so-called vegetation management. We have too many situations where branches and limbs and trees and wires are in proximity that are just waiting for a problem. And secondly, this question of, you know what, we're going to challenge that myth that it's too expensive to put these wires underground. I've got anecdotal evidence that the technology's come a long way, that it's not nearly as expensive as it used to be. And I'm sick of seeing the same movie, as I know many folks out there who are perennially losing their power. So we're going to look at everything, including that.
Okay. Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283 or tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So let's dig into one issue that's getting a lot of attention, legalizing marijuana in New Jersey. You promised to legalize recreational pot on the campaign trail, and now as governor, you've included revenue from legal pot in your first budget. And you say you want the legislature to legalize it by the end of the year. So this is going to be a huge issue all year long that we're going to be talking about. You say you're not doing it for the tax revenue that it could generate. You've got $60 million in your budget, and some people think that's a very conservative estimate. You want to legalize for social justice reasons. Explain your position.
Yeah, I think you captured that very well, Nancy, and the numbers we put in the budget are indeed quite conservative, and we're not doing this for the money. The extent to which it throws money off because we did it the right way, I'll take it. Believe me, we need it in our state, you know, given the fiscal reality we face after the past 8 years. But listen, we have the widest white non-white gap of persons incarcerated in America. It's not the only reason, but a big reason is our young persons, invariably persons of color, who are in our system due to a low-end drug crime. And I tell you, that's unacceptable. So we need comprehensive criminal justice reform. We need to review everything. I've reestablished a criminal sentencing commission that had been left dormant in the past administration. So it's not just legalization. But the social justice reason is the overwhelming reason to do this. Now, I add a couple of thoughts. I'm glad we didn't go first. Every state that's done it has made some mistakes and they've probably done some things right. So we're trying to study what's been done by the other states, and every state's unique, as we are. Secondly, it's important to know it's adult use recreational marijuana, and that's a big important thing. And thirdly, there are folks out there, and I can understand this because this was hard for me to get to. I'm a dad of four kids under the age of 21. But there are many out there who think that decriminalization is a step in the direction of legalization. And I would just caution everyone to say it may or may not be. Decriminalization doesn't crack the back of the social justice issues. It leaves the business in the hands of the bad guys. It leaves our kids exposed. And you're not regulating it and taxing it in a systematic way that you would if it were legalized. So that's sort of where we are on that. We know it's going to be a multi-month process to get through this, and we look forward to that.
Well, and speaking of decriminalization, that's a position that many black leaders in the state are calling for, and one of them is State Senator Ron Rice of Newark, and I think you're aware of his position. You know, he disagrees with you.
It's always been said that the issue is not money. The issue is social justice, but it's being sold on the backs of black folk and brown people.
Reporting by WNYC's Karen Rouse found concern that white marijuana business owners will get rich and all the weed shops will be located in black communities. True?
No, I don't think there's any basis to predict that because we have no template. But first of all, our state has a miserable track record of women and minority-owned business ownership. Absolutely abysmal compared to any absolute measure or any relative measure. Certainly compare us to New York. And so we are committed to cracking the back of that as a general matter, not just in that industry. And listen, Senator Rice, I consider a very close friend. I'm a huge fan of his. I have enormous respect for him. And again, I can't, when you first start to grapple with this issue, I had issues myself with that. But at the end of the day, I am completely convinced, and there are many convinced like me, that the right solution is to regulate this, to do it right. And that's the best way to protect our urban communities. That's the best way to protect our kids in any community. And this notion that we won't have proper representation of ownership, I can completely understand Senator's frustration, because you could make that statement across the entire set of industries right now in this state, and certainly the way the state procures. It's abysmal. We're going to change that.
Another one of the issues that's come up among Black leaders is that the state needs to make reparations first. Here's a clip we have of Reverend Charles Boyers speaking at a recent forum here in Newark.
Do we want to be the ones responsible for playing a part in a system that will make tons of young white millionaires after years of making hundreds of thousands of poor Black felons?
The current legislation doesn't have any kind of expungement of criminal records in it. Is that something you want to see?
We've said that we're conceptually very much open to that, whether it's companioned with this or separately, putting aside what the specifics of the current legislation are. And listen, again, I know Reverend Boyer. Who could blame him for, given the track record, particularly the lack of stewardship of the urban agenda, the urban communities over the past 8 years, who could blame him for assuming the worst in terms of who's going to own what and who's going to make money off of this? That's not the way he described it, is not a model that I have any interest in pursuing. As I said right from the outset, we have an abysmal record in our state in every industry and all procurement as it relates to minority and women-owned businesses. We're going to fix that. And we've got a big, robust urban agenda, and that includes a big investment in small business development of all kinds, and we're committed to that as well.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag @GovMurphy. And we have a call on the line, and somebody would like to ask you a question.
Wow, wow, wow.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on the air with Governor Phil Murphy. Is this Paul from Ridgewood?
This is Paul from Ridgewood.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hi, Governor. I'm doing fantastic. My daughter has epilepsy, and it's clear from whatever studies have been done that medical marijuana is effective in many cases. The amount of misinformation is incredible in that a lot of medical marijuana has no hallucinatory properties. Is there any way to get better information out to the public so that we can actually do research studies and then make this available?
Yeah, the answer, Paul, is yes. And I'm very happy you asked this question, because we spent the Nancy and I just spoke about marijuana, but it was all recreational. The fact of the matter is, regardless of what we said in our budget and our aspirations, the first thing we tackled was the gummed up medical marijuana reality in this state. And just so, Paul, you know, and your daughter and everybody listening in, just let me frame this by saying we were one of the first states to sort of adopt a medical marijuana regime. And eight-ish years later, we have 15,000 approximately patients in the sort of system, five dispensaries with a sixth one opening soon. Michigan, similar population to ours, came in after us, has 230-something thousand. Arizona, far fewer people, 100-something thousand. So this has been gummed up. I think, frankly, it's been gummed up for political reasons to fit some sort of a narrative. I've visited two medical marijuana dispensaries myself. I've spent many hours parsing through this. It is quite clear. Epilepsy is a prime example. It is quite clear that this is a major healthcare weapon that we have underinvested in. We've tamped down artificially. And so one of the first things we did was to call for an audit of exactly what the reality is around medical marijuana in our state. That audit will be hot off the press on Saturday. So, Paul, give me a chance to go through those results. You're going to see us talking about the conclusions, and I think you're going to see a much better, more open, more transparent, and robust regime going forward.
And if you can't get enough support in the legislature, quick answer, please, because we're going to go to a break, but would you consider putting it on the ballot?
Listen, I think on recreational adult use, we're going to pursue the legislative track. and let's see how that goes. Medical, it's already existing. We want to open that up.
Okay. Thanks, Governor Murphy. Coming up, we'll be joined by Matt Arco, State House reporter for NJ Advance Media. I'm Nancy Solomon, and you're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
Hi, my name is Judith Jamison, and WBGO is my source for loving jazz. You know I love this station. You know I do. And you know you need to be listening to this all the time because it's permanently on my preset radio stations. It's permanently there. Just turn it on any time of the day, and it will bring memories to you, or it will take you on a journey that you haven't been on before. This is our music. Love it. If you want to make a pledge of support, the number is 1-800-499-9246. That's 1-800-499-9246. Give it up.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in downtown Newark. And we have New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy with us. And now we are joined by Matt Arco, State House reporter for NJ Advance Media, which is the new name for most of us have been reading the Star Ledger for a long time. But that's the new name of the Star Ledger and all of its digital properties. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for having me.
So right off the bat, we want to know what you want to know from the governor.
Well, look, first off, I just can report for everyone out there that Governor Murphy is not wearing a backwards hat. So the storm recovery, where we must have recovered from the storm.
The sun is shining, Matt.
You know, look, I was a little bit surprised to see a story about the dress of the governor during the storm. I'm sure you weren't expecting to see something like that. Just now that you're in it. You've been in it for a while. How do you think the press has been treating you? What's your take?
I think the press has been pretty fair to us, I have to say. I get surprised by these sartorial stories myself. I'm a big backward baseball cap guy because I want to make sure my temples are covered from further sun damage with the Irish skin. And secondly, I play a lot of sports with my kids, and when I have the cap on the front, I can't see the ball coming down from above me. So I was in a dark room yesterday doing an interview. But generally, listen, I love these interactions like this. You know, we've done a fair amount of availability in press conferences lately. I was mentioning earlier a lot related to storms. You know, we had another one. We went on the phone yesterday, live today. I hope it's our last winter event of the year, at least until next winter. But so far, so good.
We're just starting pothole season, so you're going to be getting a lot of those questions.
Exactly.
Too. So what else, Matt?
So now we're in the budget season. You proposed your budget, so now lawmakers are going to have their time to go through committees and hash things out here. But we know immediately after you unveiled your budget that the reception from lawmakers in the Democratic-controlled legislature was lukewarm at best, I'd say. And even in the Senate, the state Senate's top lawmaker openly opposes you on your millionaire's tax. So I'm just curious, you know, where you stand now. What's Plan B if some of these tax proposals that you have that laid out there can't get to your desk?
Listen, I think it's just where are we? We are right where we were when we unveiled the budget. So there's nothing really changed on our side in either the sources or the uses. You know, lots of people, as you know, in this process, it's a three and a half month process because our budget address was later this year because we just got inaugurated. And normally it's more like a 4.5 month process. It's typically a good process when it's done well. You get hearings, you get lots of different inputs. So we've just started this. But I'm proud of what we presented. And I believe it's exactly plus or minus what we said we would do. Someone said to me, what was your biggest surprise? I said that I think there were very few surprises. We got to get back to investing in the middle class in this state, in the dreams of those who want to get into it. And we're going to, we're going to undo some tax gimmicks, and we're going to make the folks who, and this is not class warfare, this is not us versus them, but we're going to, this is tax equity. The folks who've done really well over the past number of years, ask them to pay a little bit more, their fair share. And I think you do that, you get that economy growing again, you shrink the inequities, and you get it working for everybody, not just for some of us. So I think so far so good. But recognize there's a long way to go. Our doors are open. Already lots of discussions. So far so good.
So you weren't taken aback by the lack of immediate support from members of your own party?
I not only was I not taken back, I think that the premise sort of overstates the reaction. I've had a lot of private conversations since the budget address, which I guess is, about 9 days ago. And that's not to say that we're all necessarily in the exact place. I'm not suggesting nor am I suggesting that there isn't, a lot of discussions to be had, and there will be. But I like where we are.
On the topic of discussions with folks, your predecessor, Governor Christie, I know used to be on the phone with Senate President Steve Sweeney at least, a couple times a week, if not daily. Similarly with former Speaker Sheila Oliver and Vincent Prieto. How often are you talking one-on-one with the Senate President and Craig Coughlin, the current Speaker?
Either I personally or my team are talking to them or their teams and other folks, by the way, not just them, but certainly them as leadership, literally all the time. And that includes going across the aisle. So there's some notion out there. I'd say that's one thing where I think the press doesn't have it right. There's some notion that we're not communicating. Trust me, we're communicating. And so that's why that's in either groups or one-on-one. I just got off. I'm not going to name who it is. I just got off several calls, text exchanges, live calls with a bunch of legislators. So this is happening all the time.
I think we're going to stick with some of the politics of this, but first we'd like to take a call. We have Ari in Passaic, who also has a comparison to make to Chris Christie, I believe. Ari, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Hey, Ari, how are you?
Hi, Governor. Thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Your predecessor, Chris Christie, was willing to work with President Obama and face the wrath of his party to work together on issues that affect New Jersey, most prominent being Hurricane Sandy. Famous picture of him hugging Chris Christie on the airport. And I was wondering if, in your position, you'd be willing to work with people, work with the executive branch, or President Trump, on the similar sort of issues, such as the Gateway Tunnel, or if there's another, God forbid, natural disaster that affects New Jersey. Would you be willing to do such a thing, even though it would undoubtedly be unpopular with many members of your own party?
The answer is 100% yes. I'm not doing this for popularity. I'm doing this to get the state back on its feet and get it back on track to the state we used to be. And if that means finding common ground with President Trump and his administration on things where we have overlapping interests, 100%. In fact, Ari, I was with the president 3 weeks ago, and I had been on the phone with him about a month ago or 2 months ago, and with him 3 weeks ago. And every time I'm with him, infrastructure, Gateway Tunnel, that's what I pound away. What I won't do is I won't sell my soul. I won't lose my principles on stuff that I feel strongly about in order to get something accomplished. So, for instance, teachers, in my humble opinion, the notion of teachers having guns makes zero sense to me. I'm not going to be shy about that. I'm not going to be shy about offshore drilling off our coast. I'm not going to be shy about stuff. My late mother would be mad. I'm going to use a double negative here. I'm not going to not stand my ground on stuff I feel strongly about in order to find that common ground. But I think the Gateway Tunnel, infrastructure, are two obvious areas where I would hope we can find that common ground.
Thanks for your call, Ari. This is Ask Governor Murphy. You're listening to us on WBGO Newark, WHYY Philadelphia, and WNYC New York. And we have WHYY's Joe Hernandez is monitoring social media tonight and taking your questions there. And we have him now to get a few of those to the governor. Hi, hey. Joe.
Hey, Nancy.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hey, Governor. Here is a question from Allison Byrne in Belmar. She says, New Jersey has high sales, income, and property taxes. Our highways are full of toll booths, and we even pay to get on the beach. In short, it is expensive to live here. It seems clear that there must be an abundance of money and therefore room to cut. Why are you raising taxes instead of cutting spending?
Listen, who could blame Allison? First of all, Joe, thank you for that. And who could blame Allison in Belmar? And by the way, Allison, I'm not that far up the road for you in Middletown, where I hang my hat. This, you hear this all the time. Wait a minute, where'd all that money go? Yeah, I've been paying these property taxes. I've been paying whatever they're paying. And by the way, this myth that there's been a property tax cap, property taxes under the last administration were up 19%. NJ transit fares up 36%. Cost across the Hudson up 80-something percent. So, Allison, you have every right to be frustrated. Where's the money gone? I'll give you one area where it's gone. We put out in the last administration over $8 billion of corporate tax incentives for large corporations. Now, I'm not opposed to smart tax incentives, and God knows I want large corporations to be in New Jersey. But we're putting them out at $162,000 per job at the end of the Christie administration. $162,000 per job created. Massachusetts, which has created jobs at seven times the rate of New Jersey, is putting them out at $22,000 a job. Now, how can they do that, Allison? You probably are wondering, right? That's because they took the money that you've been paying dearly and they invested it and fully invested it in public education, higher education, infrastructure, whether it's roads or rail, whatever it might be. We've not done that. We have starved education. We've starved higher ed. We've almost bankrupted the Transportation Trust Fund. Governor Christie canceled the ARC tunnel. Those are all things that would have made our economy stronger. It would have made it grow. It would have made the price for living here be reasonable. I think, Allison, our real objective, and this is my passion, that we're going to be once again what we used to be, a good value for money state. It won't be Mississippi. It won't be the lowest place in the country ever to live or do business. But folks will say, you know what? It's worth it. I pay a premium in New Jersey, but I get a lot back. Allison, you've been paying a premium, but you're getting little and little back. My job is to get that premium held back, get that sort of stabilized, and deliver a much bigger basket of stuff in return.
We've got a lot of questions over the last few days. People going to our Ask GovernorMurphy.org website where you can type to us a question very easily or on Twitter. And one of the things we've heard so much is from people who are upset with how much their local school district is going to get. You know, yes, they acknowledge that you're going to put more money into education than Chris Christie did, and they're happy about that, but they don't feel that their local school district is getting enough money. Yep. And that it's not the full funding formula. You say you have to step up to that. But yep. So what do you say to people? I mean, you're saying, okay, your taxes are high, but we're going to make your schools better. But how are you going to do that if you don't put in even more money than you're suggesting?
Well, listen, when I grew up, remember the Big Dig in Boston when they sunk the Central Artery? It got so bad, it took so long, they hired a PR firm, and their slogan was, if Rome had been built in a day, we would have hired their contractor. So I would say to folks who are frustrated by that, I don't blame them, but we can't solve all this overnight. We're coming out of, I mentioned over $8 billion of corporate tax credits to large corporations. We've underfunded the school funding formula in the last administration by over $9 billion. Anybody is welcome to pull out their property tax bill. I think on average in New Jersey, 53% of your property tax bill is public education. So the lack of funding from the state, dramatic underfunding, has put more pressure locally to make up the difference. And so there's been no latitude. So the economy hasn't been growing. Funding has been under what it needed to be. The big use of money was to fund tax incentives. And so we're left with this dilemma. So I would say the following. We're beginning finally a multi-year process to fully fund the school funding formula. We're putting multiple hundreds of millions of dollars in beyond what was in there. We are beginning the process to make pre-K universal in this state. We are beginning the process not just to make higher ed more generally more affordable, but to make community college literally free of charge. Those are major initiatives. So folks may not see it overnight, but there is a clear, determined, transparent path toward real property tax relief, in particular through fully funding public education.
Okay, so we're going to go again to the phones. We have Lewis in Newark. Hi, Lewis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hey, everyone. Hey, Governor, thanks for taking the call.
Hey, Lewis, how are you, man?
Outstanding. By the way, I live here in the Ironbound, and I remember you passed by during your candidacy, and I believe the Ironbound came out, supported you all the way.
Big time.
Question is this. We have over 10,000 residents just here in my neighborhood in Newark that qualify under the sanctuary city clause of having undocumented immigrants here in our community. But there's really no development from the city, the county, or the state in how to get these new residents to be more vested in actually reporting their incomes and becoming more contributory towards the tax base. And this also starts from the fact that they can't even open up their own bank accounts because without a social security number, they really can't open up a bank account. Does your current plan address any of this?
It does, Lewis. It's a great question, and it's one of these things I'm glad somebody asked it because I wanted to say something about this. And by the way, not only was I in Iron Barn during the campaign, I'm in there all the time. I had dinner there a couple of weeks ago, so I'll see you around town again. Long before Donald Trump got elected or we ever thought it was going to get elected, Lewis, on that last part of your question, we said, you know what, it's not fair that folks don't have access to a statewide identification card. And so we stand for that, and we're going to pursue that. That will allow folks to do the basic things in life that right now they can't do. We believe folks should have access, assuming they're qualified and they're trained up and they pass the tests, regardless of status, to have a driver's license. We think both of those things are good for the individuals, but they're also one of those things that are good for the broader society. Among other things, on the driver's license, you get a safer roadway because you got folks who have trained up. We also think Dreamers ought to get access to in-state financial aid, not just in-state tuition. So those are things we've stood for that we're going to pursue long before Donald Trump came along. And then, of course, along comes Donald Trump. And so in addition to that, we've spent a lot of time talking about the phrase I use more these days is safer cities because it sort of captures it better for me. The notion that if folks, regardless of their status, feel comfortable fully participating in their neighborhood, engaging with anybody, regardless whether it's a political leader, a neighbor, clergy, law enforcement, importantly. Let's not cross wires between law enforcement and immigration policies as others would like us to do. If folks feel good about what I just said, it'll be a safer city. There's plenty of evidence up and down our arms. So the answer is on all of the above, Lewis, that is what we're pursuing.
Thanks for your call, Lewis. Matt, we have time for one last question from you. It's got to be a quick one.
A quick one. Well, Governor, during the talking about taxes earlier and about how we're going to have to raise the revenues for some of the ambitious proposals that you laid out during the campaign. During the campaign, you said that you were against raising the sales tax back to the original level it was a year or two ago. Now you say that you're for. What changed your mind there?
I don't think I ever said that. I think what I said, and we didn't really talk a lot about the sales tax. I'll tell you what I was quite critical of, and that's why I call it a tax gimmick, and that's what it is. So let's not kid around about what happened here. The Transportation Trust Fund was bankrupt. We knew the only way out of that was to raise the gas tax, and that's not a very popular position politically to take. We had a governor, my predecessor, who had a personal narrative that he wanted to slash government, slash taxes, including gimmicks, no matter what, so that he wouldn't have to come out of some negotiation and say he raised taxes. So completely unrelatedly, completely without merit, he forced folks to cut the sales tax in order to say that he didn't raise taxes. So you know what? I was very critical of it then. You can look that up and say, listen, okay, I understand if you raise the gas tax, you might want to find something like increase the earned income tax credit, which isn't perfect but gets at that same population. That's what I would have done to mitigate that. The last thing you do is cut the sales tax, and so we're going to undo that, and that's exactly what we've done.
Okay, well, thanks, Matt Arco of NJ Advanced Media, for joining us and chipping in on the question asking. Next, we'll continue our conversation with Governor Phil Murphy, including more, lots more, of your calls and social media questions. You're listening to Ask the Governor, Ask Governor Murphy, on WBGO, on WNYC, and WHYY. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
I think WBGO is the standard bearer in jazz music. It is the voice of the jazz community and the people, because jazz musicians really reflect what is going on in the world today. I know these times are really, really hard, but if you have it in your heart and you have a little bit in your pocketbook, I think it's really, really important for people to continue to sustain this station, because it's a place where you can find peace of mind.
If you've got the key, then I've got the door.
Hi, I'm Diane Reeves, and WBGO is my source for the evolution of this beautiful music. To pledge your support for WBGO, please call 1-800-499-9246. I love WBGO.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283. Or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon, and we're coming to you live from the studios of WBGO in Newark with New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. And we're going to really try to take as many calls as possible. We have Tom from Morristown on the line. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question for the governor?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Hi, Governor Murphy. First of all, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm really honored to be speaking with you tonight.
As am I.
I just want to say that I think that our state and our country is far behind in the fight against climate change. So I wanted to ask, what exactly is your plan to make sure New Jersey not only fights climate change, but is a leader among other states in the fight against climate change, which I think is our biggest threat as a country as a whole?
You and I are born under the same star. Before I answer it, Matt Arco asked a very good question about sales tax. One thing I didn't get a chance to say, I don't make light of any $1 that goes out of somebody's wallet, so I don't want anyone to think otherwise. But if you're a household that makes between $75,000 and sort of $125,000 a year, it's an $85 per year, that 3/8 of a cent gimmick. I want to say to everybody out there, we're going to deliver multiples of that to you and your kids over the years to come in terms of reinvestment in the middle class. Tom, I'm completely with you. So what are we doing? Number one, we've already signed up to rejoin the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative collection of states. Number two, I signed on to the Paris Climate Accord standards. Even though Trump and has pulled the United States out of it, New Jersey will abide by those standards along with a bunch of other like-minded states. Thirdly, we have a 100% clean energy vision for our state by mid-century, and a big chunk of that is offshore wind. And so we've already gotten that process going at the Board of Public Utilities. We think we can get up to 3,500 megawatts offshore. Fourthly, I'm in Newark. Too often when we talk about the environment, we think of open fields and keeping our water clean and streams clean, and we should do that. But we too infrequently think about environmental justice. You know, we're only a couple of miles here from the ports and all the trucks that go in and out and all the asthma it costs young people around this community relative to other places in our country. So getting ahead of environmental justice, making sure they never drill for oil offshore in the state of New Jersey. Now, Tom, the only sobering thing I would say is we're going to do all that. I want to be best in class. I said to Jerry Brown a few months ago, I'm going to be the California of the East Coast. And somebody said, Murphy, you should have shown more attitude. It said, if we succeed or when we succeed, California will be the New Jersey of the West Coast. But we can't do it alone. We need Congress to finally get its act together. We need a president who actually thinks this through and understands it's a national threat. So I hope we can be a, not just do everything we can, but we can be a role model for others to look up to and hopefully follow. Great question.
Now, there was a story last week, however, that you had in your budget, you've diverted some clean energy funds towards to help you with the bailout and the fix-up of New Jersey Transit, which as a commuter, I'm a full supporter of. But I think it's probably, from what I could tell, it's the first time you've actually disappointed your base. And I was curious why you did that.
Listen, it's not a volition. The diversions have been, this has been a house of cards financially, our state. It's a Listen, we were run by a guy who wanted to get the nomination of the right-wing Republican Party. So what do? You gut government. You come up with a bunch of tax gimmicks like the sales tax, and you rip the progressive soul of the state 3 standard deviations to the right. So are there still some of those things going on? Yeah, again, we can't build Rome in a day, but we've cut. You look at the amount of money we've put into NJ Transit. You look at the amount of diversions we've cut down. We will get to where we promised to get to, but we can't get there necessarily overnight because we've inherited literally a house of cards and a fiscal disaster. We will get it fixed, though, I promise, folks, and we'll do it the right way.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question for Governor Murphy, call us at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet your question using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. We have Carolyn from Livingston on the line. Carolyn, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Governor.
No problem.
I have a question for you. What will you do about stopping gun violence and protecting kids at school?
You sound young to me. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I'm in fifth grade.
Fifth grade, wow.
Excellent. Thanks for calling.
I got a fifth grader in the studio with me listening right now. Listen, Carolyn, God bless you for calling in and for your concerns. It's just jaw-dropping, the fact that our Congress and our president have not woken up and have done something about this. And not just this Congress, but this Congress. And I tell you one thing I'm incredibly proud of is the next generation, because our generation's failed. And you, Carolyn, and your classmates and colleagues are going to get it done where we couldn't. So I'll tell you what, and by the way, I'm in one of the march. In fact, I'm in Newark. I'm looking at my colleagues. I'm in Newark on Saturday in one of the March for Our Lives, which are taking place all over our state and all over the country this weekend. How do we change this, Carolyn? Number one, keep Congress's feet to the fire until they make real changes. Number two, in the meantime, or in until we see those changes, let's take what are already good, strong laws in New Jersey and make them stronger. And the legislature is pushing through a bunch of initiatives. Conceptually, we like, I think, all of them. And unlike the last governor who vetoed a bunch of gun safety laws, I'll sign them. And by the way, there are folks out there, Carolyn, who are law-abiding citizens who have guns, who talk about the Second Amendment. You should make sure anyone brings it up, say Governor Murphy has no issue in coming near you on the Second Amendment. This is about gun safety. It's about, you know, reducing magazine clips. It's about banning armor-piercing bullets. It's about closing background loopholes, a whole series of what I would think are good hygiene. But the problem, Carolyn, then, even then, is if we make our laws as good as they can be, over 80% of the gun crimes in New Jersey are committed with guns that come in from outside New Jersey. So until we can get Congress to act, we started a coalition of states called States for Gun Safety. New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, ourselves, Delaware, Vermont, Puerto Rico, I think, are in it. We're hoping to expand it. Cooperation on intelligence sharing, trying to do a better job of tracking down illicit and illegal guns. And intel, as I mentioned, in-state pursuing gun research legislation. That was part of my budget at one of our state universities. We put some money into that. I think, Carolyn, if we take a bunch of those steps, and you should also know we are very vigilant in reviewing all of our protocols about school safety in particular. That's really important that we stay as sharp as we can be, and we work with local law enforcement and local authorities. God willing, that gets us to a better place. We must get Congress to act, however. That's the ultimate and most important step we need to take together.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. The number to call if you'd like to ask the governor a question is 844-677-9283. We've got WHYY's Joe Hernandez reading your questions from Twitter, and he joins us with a question. What have you got, Joe?
Hey, Nancy. So, Governor, you addressed this briefly earlier, but we're getting a ton of questions on school funding from Chesterfield in Burlington County to Red Bank in Monmouth County. This question comes from Joe in Middlesex County. He says, my town, Edison, is underfunded by the state by $20 million for its schools, and yet you are only proposing to give us an additional $750,000. Meanwhile, Jersey City is overfunded by $150 million, and you are giving them an additional $1.8 million. How on earth do you justify doing something like this that is so against common sense and justice? Why aren't you cutting Jersey City's state aid?
Joe, listen, this is a question Joe's not alone. Joe from Edison, that is Joe Hernandez. You also mentioned Chesterfield or Red Bank. I live across the river from Red Bank. That's the one I know the best. And that's been, you know, we're digging out. Joe from Edison, I got it. We're putting in $300-something million more than was put in there last year. The process that takes place over the next several months with the legislative leadership teams, obviously that's a discussion that we're looking forward to having. We've underfunded public education by over $9 billion in this state over the past 8 years. We are determined to fully funding the formula and to getting this right. I think all but 30 school districts in the state have more money in this budget than they did in the last budget. Whether or not the apportionment and all of that is in the right pockets and whatnot, that's something that deserves discussion and action going forward. But I promise you, help is on the way. We can't get there overnight. We're digging out of an absolute lack of stewardship and fiscal realities that are very stark that we're recovering from.
We often hear in New Jersey there's a lot of resentment among suburban communities about what's called the Abbott funding of urban school districts. This is the 1985 Supreme Court decision that said it's not fair to rely fully on property taxes, that low-income communities are being hurt by this, and the Supreme Court ruled, as you know, to require the state to fund low-income school districts. So, but now we have a situation where Jersey City has changed, the demographics have changed, the economics of the town have changed. And I think that's where a lot of the questioners want to know, like, why is Jersey City continuing to get this Abbott money?
Yeah, let's make sure everybody realizes, and I know they do because they're living it, but the frame is the following. There was a landmark school funding formula, which is the only school funding formula ever blessed by our state Supreme Court, back, I think, in 2008. So I've said two things, not one thing, and this is going back to our friend from Edison, Joe, but anyone else who has this issue. Rightfully, by the way, they're asking the rightful questions. We're doing two things. One is we are putting in literally hundreds of millions of dollars more this year than last year into funding public education. And that is the first step in a multi-year step to ramp that up to fully fund that formula from 10 years ago. But the second thing I've said is the formula is 10 years old. Things have changed. So we want to work with the legislature to get that tweaked and updated and get that into a place that's a 2018 reality, not a 2008 reality. We have to do both. We are committed to doing both, and I expect fully that we will do both.
Okay, we have more callers on the line. Do we still have Vicki from Weehawken, or did we lose her?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, hi, Vicki.
Hello, Vicki.
Hi, thanks for doing this radio segment, Governor Murphy. I do hope it becomes a regular event.
It will.
My question is this. Connecticut and Pennsylvania have a reciprocal deal with New York in that they do not require teachers from their states to pay state income tax on their pensions. So New Jersey does not participate in the reciprocity. As a recently retired New York City teacher and a New Jersey resident for over 40 years, I am considering moving back to New York in order to avoid the state tax, especially considering the recent Republican tax debacle. So how would you respond to that?
So, Vicky, first of all, I like your last phrase. I got to use that more frequently, the Republican tax debacle. So you've helped me out there. I have not been asked this question before. So one of the deals I'm going to have with Nancy and anyone else who on these shows, I'm not going to try to give you an answer that I don't have. But the good news, Vicky, is, first of all, don't leave New Jersey. Help is on the way. I literally think this is the time to stay and or to come to New Jersey, and folks will look back, I hope, sooner than later and say, you know what, that was the best decision of my life. I stayed there. It worked for me. But our entire cabinet is listening to this show right now. So I'm going to ask Dr. Lamont Repelet, who is our commissioner, acting commissioner of education, is going to call you literally within the next 24 hours and go through this with you. He might also be joined by our treasurer, Liz Moyo, because you've got not just an ed question, but a tax question, and I want to make sure we get that right. So, Vicky, bear with us. One, if not both of them, are going to call you within the next 24 hours and follow up.
Okay, and we have more questions pouring in from our AskGovernorMurphy.org website. WHYY's Joe Hernandez, what do you got there for us?
This is a question from DK from TNEC. They say, current New Jersey state driver's licenses will not be a valid form of identifications at any federal facility, including military bases, or be valid to go through security at airports due to the enforcement of the Real ID Act. Will New Jersey be compliant by October 2018 when our extension from the federal government runs out?
The answer to DK is I honestly don't know. So that's one I got to come back to. I don't want to ever promise you something that is not going to happen. So I will ask on this one, I'm going to ask Sue Fulton, who is our acting commissioner in the Department of Motor Vehicles, and maybe somebody from our Attorney General office. Do we have DK's details?
I think we can email.
It's coming in through Joe Hernandez?
Yeah, I think we can email. We'll follow up with that. So let's go then
DK,
to
DK, we'll follow up with you.
Natalie from Park Ridge. Natalie, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, Natalie, how are you?
Governor Murphy, you have given me hope in a very dark political time. So thank you very much for your service. And everything that you're saying is really heartening. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie.
My question is about the PARC standardized test that is used in New Jersey schools. You spoke against it during your campaign. The Education Law Center has come up with statistics saying that last year in New Jersey, of the 100,000 seniors who graduated, only 27% of them would have been eligible to graduate using PARC score only, and only 17% of African American students would have been eligible to graduate using PARC score only. In 2021, under the current law, a PARC score will be required for graduation in New Jersey, and I'm really hoping that you're going to tell me that that's going to be done away with and soon. So that's my question.
So, Natalie, I've been very critical of the PARC test. I'm a public school product myself. My sister is a retired Boston City school teacher, and I know if I get this one wrong, she's going to speak to me in her teacher's voice. But I don't like the high stakes testing notion. I'm all for assessments. I got four kids under the age of 21, and I want to know how they're doing. That's not the issue. The question is, how do you do that? I think more regular, lower stakes, quicker feedback testing is the right way to go. PARC is going to be in place this year because it was too baked in the cake, so you need a much bigger runway. Dr. Repelet, who I mentioned a minute ago, has already called for, with my complete blessing, a grouping of folks from all perspectives to figure out a better mousetrap, not just generally, but also in terms of high school graduation requirement.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Governor Murphy, thanks for joining us tonight. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. The show was produced by Katie Colinari with help from Alexandra Hill, Corey Goldberg, Joe Hernandez, Megan Ryan, Sean Bowditch, and Doug Doyle. Our executive producer is Amy Niles. I'm Nancy Solomon. Good night.
WBGO's Radar is where you can go and hear music before it comes out. This week, the Wynton Marsalis Septet with United We Swing, with special guests that will surprise even you. Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, Lyle Lovett, James Taylor, Audra McDonald, the Blind Boys of Alabama. It's Radar this week. It's worth a listen or two. Hear it at wbgo.org/radar.
I'm very happy and honored to present the star of our show tonight, Miss Sarah Vaughan.
Mr. Quincy Jones!
And there's nothing else to say except what a feeling it is in my heart to present Thelonious Monk.
Live and direct from the epicenter of the jazz world, this is WBGO Newark and WBGO.org.